So this evening, I wanted to continue what we started last weekend. For those who were here last weekend, or joined us last weekend at the BIPOC sit, we touched on three things that we're going to develop up more, and we'll continue to do this for the next few months. So the first thing was talking about the rains retreat or the winter retreat, and inviting everyone to practice with us with that. So BBMC does this every year. We invite folks to take up that practice, 3 months of going a little deeper, or doing something that we've been wanting to do but haven't had the chance to do. And practicing with that. Maybe there's something particular. Maybe we want to sit extra. Maybe we want to talk with someone we have something with that we haven't had a chance to do. So we discussed starting that soon. And then we talked about the Bodhisattva path, this path of in the Mahayana tradition that we practice in, this understanding of our hearts, this path of really getting to know ourselves so we can transform those things we might want to transform. So we can be in the world the way we want to be in the world. And that this path is similar to when we talk about, say, the five mindfulness trainings, which it's not, oh, I'm going to be on this Bodhisattva path and it's all done. But it's like, it's a path. It's really a path. So we try, and then it's like one step forward, two step back, like that. But the understanding is once we intention that we're on this Bodhisattva path, something already happens. So just the mere intentioning is already a transformation. And then we practice, right? And part of the practice of this path of opening ourselves, developing our bodhicitta, this heart and mind of love, this committal to develop in such a way that we can benefit not just ourselves, but all beings. And that we don't stop until every being benefits. So it's a big path, it's huge, right? And so it's quite something. And it doesn't happen overnight. And yeah, it's an intention, it's an aspiration. Yeah. And so we don't beat ourselves up. We don't cling to the fact that tomorrow we're not done, because that really is very egotistical, actually, to think that that could happen. Yeah. Just like that. I mean, even the Buddha took the Buddha a few years, didn't it? And so it's not a path of punishment, it's a path of awakening. And it takes time. And then the third thing we took up in short form last week was anger, this practicing with anger, as one of the difficult emotions of one of what we would call the defilements. One of the difficult emotions that is hard to transform, and yet that comes up so often. In the 8th century writing or teaching of Shantideva, who wrote this beautiful book called The Path of the Bodhisattva. It's a really beautiful book on that path, where he talks about the different emotional, the mental formations that we have difficulty with: anger, impatience, fear, greed, hatred, all these things that really we're on this path to transform. And these are nothing, these mental formations are nothing, they're not new, right? We've talked about them before. And so in this book, he describes these mental formations, and that specifically we talk about anger, and that anger was something that was one that we really needed to transform, that it comes out of perceiving something was done that was wrong. And so it almost then justifies us to feel like we can do wrong to the person who caused that initial harm. And then that it's really a exclusive of finding joy, because once we're in anger, it's like the teachings of Thay, right? It's that we've let this one emotion take us over and nothing else is there. So our clarity is like gone out the door, because we're now consumed with this mental formation of anger. And so there's no happiness there. In fact, there's nothing else there but that. And so that this is also, not only is it exclusive of happiness, but it's also, it goes along with ignorance, actually. So there's not just ignorance on the part of the person who acted in a way that we perceived as wrong and harmful. There's ignorance in the way we're responding. And so this is where it's hard sometimes, right, to, I think, understand. And that's why it's so important to remember that it's a path that we're practicing, and every day as we practice in different ways, however our practice looks and feels, we continue to grow and evolve, and we keep getting deeper and deeper understanding. And as we continue that, we start to understand and let go of some of the things that we hold on to tightly. And in doing that, we're also letting go of our ignorance around things. And in doing that, as we gain our wisdom, we will respond differently to things that previous to that wisdom, we'll respond in a different way. Right? This is the understanding that today I'm different than I was yesterday. And then I'm also similar. Because every day there is some transformation. It's an active process. And the path of the Bodhisattva is, how do we want to direct this path? How do we want to be the ones saying, this is how I'm going to develop. I'm not going to continue in these habitual formations where something happens and I do this, something happens and I do that, or I'm acting out of my fear again, or I'm acting out of whatever, greed again, or whatever it is. So instead of just going along, right, in this like habitual way, we're actually saying, oh, I notice I did this. Wow, why did I do that? So we start to investigate. And then we notice that when we do that, oh, we feel this way. Like in those moments, we have no happiness. In that moment of anger, there's no happiness there, right? So it's an investigation and it's a path. Now, we started last week to talk about what are some of the antidotes of this process of transforming. And so what I want to do today is to talk about the different ways that we, the different antidotes, the different ways that we practice. What is it that we practice with to be able to see more clearly and transform what we want to transform, right? So we move away from the ignorance, and the way we are in with ourselves and with each other comes out of this knowing, comes out of this wisdom. And out of this wisdom, it will result with us responding in a different way, a way different than we responded previously without the wisdom. So I want to share. So we've talked about this as well, like, but we're putting it together in this construct, if you will, which is we want to develop this path of awakening. On this path of awakening, we want to really look at how we habitually respond to things with anger, with hatred, with greed, with delusion, with perceptions that maybe are not necessarily justified for what is right there. There's other things that we're responding with as well. So it doesn't negate the fact that someone did something wrong. What we're looking at is how are we going to respond to that, right? It's very, so we sometimes say, oh, well, by not responding in a certain way with anger, or rage or something, we're letting them slide, right? We're giving them a whatever, letting them off the hook. Yeah. And so that's not what is being said, right? What's being said is how are we going to respond to this wrong? And do we respond? Do we feel like we can respond with wrong to wrong with wrong? Which is a really, really deep teaching, and it's a difficult teaching because in our society we've kind of learned that many ways. Right? Revenge is a real thing for many of us. And so how do we, especially in the work of activism and justice, there's yeah, I think we kind of sometimes confuse justice with revenge. So one of the ways, antidotes we spoke of last week was loving kindness. And so our meditation was around remembering a moment of loving kindness, of metta. And today our meditation was on compassion. Remembering a moment where we were acting in a compassionate way to ourselves or to others, and then remembering a moment of irritation or something where we were getting angry. Nothing big because we're practicing with it. And then seeing what happens, you know, what happens when we have compassion around that. And yes, it was only 30 minutes, and it is the practice to not take it all in, not take the big things and like sit there and say, I'm going to take this big thing and I'm going to transform it right now in this 15 or 20 minute sit. This is not the most compassionate way to be with ourselves. Yeah. It's really to develop the soil in us so that we can investigate and turn to and look at, oh, how do I do this? What do I usually do? Do I notice how I feel when I do this? Do I like how I feel? Does this moment need to be exclusive of my happiness? Is it okay for me to like cut out pieces of my day and say that's okay to respond in this way because that person did this or this person did this? Or I remember someone doing this to me, and now I just have this thought of, I wish they dropped dead. Right? So there are moments and chunks of time and things that happen that somehow just drops out of our path of practice. And so this cultivating these different ways of taking care of it allows us to practice with them in little ways, right? So the four divine abodes, this is something we've talked about before. There's different terms for it, the immeasurable mind, the four Brahma Viharas, the limitless minds. And these are mind states, heart spaces that we cultivate as an antidote to take care of these difficult emotions, these difficult mental formations, like anger, like greed, like hatred, like delusion, like impatient, like intolerance. And so I'll review the four. We already practiced loving kindness last week. Today we practice with compassion. The other two are sympathetic joy. And the last one of the four divine abodes are equanimity. And so we practice with these things, not just to practice with them, we practice with them so that we are like building up these muscles to take care of these difficulties, this, you know, the weight of what's always going on. So the compassion, right? It allows us this understanding. Why is this person acting in this way? Oh, okay. And we know that sometimes when we have this understanding, we shift from a retaliation mode into a almost a neutral mode sometimes. Because now we understand why they said what they said or why they did what they did. It doesn't mean that it's wrong, you know? It doesn't mean that it's not wrong what they said. Right? So this is really important to understand. Yeah. Why do, and I don't know how everyone here feels about abortion, but I'm going to go there. Why do people think that it's okay to control a woman's body, for a woman to make a choice? Why do men think this? Right? Okay, so if someone's trying to tell me how I'm going to control my body, I'm going to say that is wrong. So it doesn't change that they're in my world, I think that's wrong. Yeah. So it doesn't change my perception in this case. I think that's wrong. But my practice allows me to think, now, why is this man thinking he can do that? And then when I think about it, I'll have to look at this whole history of misogyny and patriarchy. And then I understand, oh, this is the status quo. This is how we've been cultivated, reared, seeped in, we've breathed in the oxygen of misogyny. And so of course he's gonna think that. And so the way I respond to that is different. It may not be, why does this fool think he can control my body? Right? It may be something different. It's like, yeah, this man was brought up in a household where there wasn't this education of the ignorance around the role of men and women in society. Yeah. And so we practice with compassion, it gives us this deeper understanding, and that's going to change how we respond to that person. So now we're not creating this negative karma for ourselves by hating on him, in this case, in this scenario. Yeah. And then we're not reacting to them in a way where it might really make them react to us in maybe in more violence, because telling me how to control my body is violent. But if I react in a violent way, it may nudge up what this person thinks they can say to me and do. And so I'm also engaging with them to bring forth more violence. Now, some might say, is that my responsibility? But this is what our practice does. It invites us to think about it. Is it our responsibility? Remember last week I said, explore this understanding of anger, right? This is our practice, right? I have a quote here from Tai. Because this understanding that anger makes us act. So he says, anger is the energy that people use in order to act. But when you are angry, you're not lucid and you might do wrong things. That is why compassion is a better energy. And the energy of compassion is very strong. And so in our teachings, we understand that the energy of compassion is actually stronger than the energy of anger. And that acting out of the energy of compassion is more powerful than acting out of the energy of anger. It has longer lasting effects. It's more sustainable. And it doesn't create all these layers of more negativity that comes when we act out of anger. And so that's why it's something that we want to really think about, because it's a very different way that I think we've learned to think about how do we respond to hurt? How do we respond to people who cause us real harm? And so the teachings are not saying that these things are harmful. The teachings are saying, how are we going to engage with this harm? And are we going to engage in a way that causes more violence, right? The, you know, the whole Gandhi with, if we did an eye for an eye, we'd just have a world of blind people. It's kind of like that. Now, the third and the fourth Brahma Viharas, sympathetic joy. Sympathetic joy is having a kindness and a happiness for someone who is experiencing something positive. You know, and in the path of the Bodhisattva, there's a commentary on a person who, whenever he's starting to feel sad, depressed, angry, he goes and sits in a park and just watches people, strangers, and just wishes them goodness, like wishing them happiness, like, I'm happy for your happiness, I'm happy for your happiness, I'm happy for your happiness. And so sometimes it's easier to have happiness for someone's happiness who's a stranger. I think the harder one is when there's someone who we're close to gets, let's say, a job that we might want. Sometimes hard to be happy for them. Again, it doesn't speak to the fact that of how they might have gotten that job, but just how does someone's success and happiness, how do we hold that? So it's a sympathetic joy, is having a joy for someone's joy. Not feeling competitive, not feeling that I should have gotten it, but really joy for someone's, right? Pema Chodron talks about at one point when another teacher whose book was being published and their book got all this acclaim, and they had just published something and they were wondering, why didn't their book get the same acclaim? And that when she noticed that, she felt embarrassment, but the beauty was noticing it, because it's those little moments where we sometimes don't notice the little gaps, where we're practicing in certain ways, but we don't notice it. And this path, you know, why do we sit there and follow our breath? It's so that the subtle things start become apparent. And then we get to decide how we're going to show up in the world. With what energy are we going to show up in the world? How are we going? Because that moment of, why wasn't it me? That's an energy we're putting out. It doesn't not just, you know, energy doesn't just collapse. It goes somewhere. It lands. And so in that moment, often we miss those thoughts, those fleeting glimpses of thoughts. And the last one is equanimity, which for a lot of us, it's another hard one in taking care of our difficulties. Some people think it's just throwing your hands up and saying, I don't care, doesn't matter, being neutral to everything. And we've also talked about equanimity in Sangha before. Equanimity is not just giving up. It is not just turning a blind eye and saying, whatever you say is fine, right? It's this evenness, this mind that doesn't get rocked one way or the other. So when things happen, whether it's a joyful thing or if it's a painful thing, there's an inner balance that meets it, right? And so that inner balance allows us to not fall into anger or frustration, or overly joy, where we lose ourselves. So we're, instead of swaying there all the way like this and like this, maybe we balance, so that when something happens that might hurt us, that inner balance allows us to look at it and acknowledge, wow, like this is really wrong. And now we have choice of how we're going to respond, because we're seeing it, we're acknowledging it. We're not just getting like fiery hot and just reacting. This balance allows us to have the clarity. Some people talk about equanimity somewhat like wisdom, because it's a noting instead of a reacting. And when we note, then we can make a different decision than when we're reacting. It's like the fire is burning and we can't put it out. So we are in this balance, this inner balance, this ease inside of us allows us to stay in a space of choice. So we really see what's happening. We have this clarity. We respond with clarity. And we notice, oh, I can do this now. Okay, I'll do this. Or right now is not a good time for me to respond in a certain way. I need to leave this alone. And another time I'll be able to do something different. Right? So it's not a turning away from without an understanding. It's a turning, if we're turning away or turning in a direction, it's turning with wisdom. We have clarity. We're seeing more clearly because we have that balance. So we don't give up. We're not indifferent. We're actually in choice. So I'm looking at the time and I think I need to stop here. These we just discussed were the four Brahma Viharas, ways to take care on this Bodhisattva path of anger, of irritation, of hatred, of greed. This way to cultivate this inner soil, so when the things are falling, we determine what's going to stay and grow and how it's going to grow. And next time we'll talk about the seven paramitas, which are other skillful ways that we cultivate in order to take care as part of our path of practice and awakening. So thank you for listening, and I'll invite Abel for us to take some breaths in and let it all out, let it all go.